Hi, this is Sid again. Today's cut is from my album, The Telltale Heart and Other Terrifying Tales. Learn more at my website, sidlieberman.com.
A man stood upon a railroad bridge in northern Alabama, looking down at the swirling water 20 feet below. His executioner, a sergeant in the Federal Army, had finished the preparations. His hands were tied behind his back. A noose encircled his neck. A captain stood a little ways off. At each end of the bridge, there was a sentinel standing at attention like a statue. The only other spectators at the hanging were a company of Yankee infantry waiting on the bank beside a cannon at parade rest, the butts of their rifles on the ground. The man to be hanged, Peyton Farquhar, was a 35-year-old civilian planter. He belonged to an old and highly respected Alabama family, and so naturally he was devoted to the Southern cause. Now he was to be hanged for that cause, for the Northern troops had caught him trying to sabotage the bridge he stood on, the Owl Creek Bridge. As Farquhar stared at the water, he thought, if I could just free my hands, I might throw off the noose and spring into the stream. I could dive and evade the bullets, swim downstream. I'd reach the bank, take to the woods, and get away. Get home to my wife. My little ones. These were the thoughts that flashed through the doomed man's brain as the captain nodded to the sergeant. Farquhar plunged straight down. He felt a sharp pain in his neck. It shot through every fiber of his body. His limbs were on fire. He was conscious of motion, that he was swinging like a vast pendulum. He knew he was suffocating. And then all at once, with a terrible suddenness, the light about him shot upward. There was a loud splash, a roaring in his ears, and all was cold and dark. He knew that the rope had broken and that he had fallen into the stream. He also knew that he was dying. The noose around his neck was still suffocating him, and he was sinking deeper and deeper into the river. He was not conscious of the effort, but a sharp pain in his wrist told him he was trying to free his hands. It was as if he were watching someone else. He wanted to yell, "Bravo! Magnificent!" And then they were free. He watched them as they attacked the rope around his neck, as they beat the water trying to bring him to the surface. He looked up and wondered if he would make it. His neck ached, his brain was on fire, his lungs were about to burst. And then suddenly his head exploded from the river. His eyes were blinded by the sunlight. His chest expanded, filling with air. "I'm alive," he thought. "Alive." He looked around. Everything seemed so beautiful. His senses were so alert. He could see the individual leaves on the trees, the veins of each leaf, the colors in the dewdrops on a million blades of grass. He had come to the surface facing downstream, and now the river began to wheel him slowly around. He saw the bridge, his executioners silhouetted against the blue sky. They shouted, gesticulated. Their movements were grotesque and horrible, their forms gigantic. He heard a shot, and something struck the water within a few inches of his face. He glanced to the left and saw one of the sentinels with a rifle to his shoulder, a light cloud of blue smoke rising from the muzzle. Farquhar swore that he could see the gray eye of the man who fired gazing into his own through the sight of the rifle. Then the river turned him again, and he was facing the company of infantry high up on the bank. They stood with their rifles against their shoulders. He knew they were about to deliver a volley. So Farquhar dove as deeply as he could, yet he heard the dull thunder of the volley over the roaring of the river, and soon bits of metal were brushing his face, his hands as they slowly drifted downward. When he rose to the surface, gasping for breath, he was far downstream. He saw that the soldiers had almost finished reloading. Their metal ramrods flashed all at once in the sunshine as they were drawn from their barrels. He was about to dive, but an explosion stirred the river to its depths, and a rising sheet of water curved over and fell upon him, blinding, strangling him. They had fired the cannon at Farquhar. The hunted man began to swim vigorously with the current, but almost immediately he felt himself whirled round and round, spinning like a top. He was caught in a whirlpool. The water, bridge, forest, banks, men were commingled and blurred. All seemed streaks of color. He was being tossed with a velocity that made him giddy and sick. I'm going to drown, he thought, after all of this. But the river spat him out upon the gravel at the foot of the southern bank. To Farquhar, the gravel looked like diamonds, rubies, emeralds. He dug his fingers into it and threw it over himself in handfuls. He wept with delight. The air was filled with the perfume of flowers. A beautiful dappled light shone between the trunks of the trees, and the wind in their branches made the music of Aeolian harps. He turned on his back, feeling that he could stay forever in this enchanted spot. But then the cannoneer woke him from his reverie. He could hear a cannonball cracking and smashing the branches in the forest close by. He sprang to his feet, rushed up the sloping bank, and plunged into the forest. All day he traveled, laying his course by the sun. The forest seemed impenetrable. There wasn't a break anywhere, not even a woodsman's road. He had not known he'd lived in so wild a region. By nightfall he was exhausted, footsore, famished. But the thought of his wife and children urged him on. At last he found the road which led in the right direction, but it was strange, for it was wide and straight as a city street, and yet it seemed untraveled. No fields bordered it, no dwelling anywhere to suggest human habitation. The black bodies of the trees formed a straight wall on both sides. Golden stars shone overhead, looking unfamiliar and grouped in strange constellations. The wood on either side was full of singular noises, among which, once or twice, he distinctly heard whispers in an unknown tongue. His neck was in pain, and lifting a hand to it, he found that it was horribly swollen. He knew that it had a circle of black around it where the rope had bruised it. His eyes. Something had happened to his eyes. He could no longer close them. His tongue was swollen with thirst. To relieve its fever, he thrust it forward between his teeth into the cold air. How soft the ground was beneath him. He could no longer even feel the roadway under his feet. He must have fallen asleep while walking, for the next thing he knew, it was morning, and he was at the gate to his home. All was as he had left it, bright and beautiful. He pushed open the gate and made his way down the wide walk, and there was his wife stepping down from the veranda to meet him, looking so fresh and cool and sweet. There was such a joy on her face. How beautiful she is, thought Farquhar, how beautiful. And he sprung forward down the path with extended arms, trying to clasp her tightly to him, when he felt a stunning blow upon the back of the neck. A blinding white light blazed all about him with sound like the shock of a cannon. Then all was darkness and silence, for Peyton Farquhar was dead. His body, with a broken neck, swung gently from side to side beneath the timbers of the Owl Creek Bridge.
I hope you enjoyed listening. This story is distributed under a Creative Commons license, which requires attribution for all reproduction and prohibits commercial use. Find out more about me at my website, sidlieberman.com. That's SYDLIEBERMAN.com.